What makes Antarctica unique and incredibly biodiverse is the marine life. So the marine life are essential and they interact with the land. So you have seals and penguins and birds, seabirds and all of these things, but they're dependent on the marine environment. But one of the most remarkable things about being there is you can actually walk along the coastline or the beach and you have animals coming up to you. I mean, this is such a unique experience in the world today because they have no fear of humans. And you see this pristine environment where animals are curious and they come up to you and sort of think, well, what are you doing here and who are you? What animal are you? So to not protect that, I think, would be incredibly sad. But also think about it. You live in the South Pole. Where are you going to move to if it gets warmer? There is no further south to go. They're already as far south as they can be.
What animals were coming up to you?
Oh, you get little Adelie penguins. Very curious. Most of the penguins are curious, so the emperor penguins as well. And elephant seals were down at Davis, and they're fascinating.
I know what a seal is, but what is an elephant seal?
It's a species of seal, but the males will have these big protruding sort of rostrum or nose, so that's where they get their name, the elephant seal. They're remarkable creatures, and there were a group of scientists actually studying them when we were there, and they were putting little devices on their heads to record their depth and temperature and things to get oceanographic information. So they stick them on their heads and then they send, well, the seals just do their thing, but they transmit data back to base and they're able to learn more about the ocean and different things.
Oh, wow.
And one of the fascinating things is these seals can dive more than 2,000 metres depth.
Oh.
Yeah, and we're talking about a mammal here, so it's got lungs, it needs air, it needs to come back up. So you're talking about some very interesting physiological capabilities that these animals have.
They should put a GoPro on.
They should, it's just what's missing, you know, except there's not much light down there, but yeah.
And what were you doing there this time around?
So I was with a team of researchers and we were going down specifically to investigate sulfur cycling.
Sulfur cycling?
Yeah.
What's that?
Well, marine algae produce sulfur compounds, and these get taken up and also converted by bacteria and changed into other sulfur compounds, which can actually release into the atmosphere and influence cloud formation. So there's a very big sulfur cycle that goes on in the ocean that's mediated by these organisms.
Wow. And why are you looking at that in particular?
As one of the major nutrient cycles, it's important to have this fundamental knowledge so that we can better understand how it works and how the interaction between these organisms operates. But also because of its influence in climate or in cloud formation, there's this very strong focus on trying to understand how this may shift with changes in ocean condition as well.
And how might that? How might they change?
There's still preliminary information out there, but it can change in various ways. So the environmental conditions of the ocean can influence how much sulfur compounds are produced by the phytoplankton, and in turn how the bacteria that take them up respond to that, and then the ending result is how much is released into the atmosphere. So these can be influenced by climate conditions.
Is there sulfur in clouds?
Yes. So clouds are essentially made up of a lot of different nucleating compounds or particles, and some of them can be sulfur, as well as sea salt, sea spray.
With more sulfur in the atmosphere, is that damaging somehow to the inhabitants of this area, or is it damaging to the planet more across the board?
An interesting question, because this is biologically produced sulfur, so it's for cloud formation, which would have a cooling effect, essentially. But of course, we know from history that we used to put a lot of sulfur dioxide into the atmosphere, and that would cause blackening out. So you'd have a lot of pollution from burning and various other things, which we've now learnt to filter out. So sulfur has a cooling effect because the aerosol particles in the atmosphere will actually reduce the amount of heat and light coming into the planet.
Right. And how are you doing this? These are phytoplankton are like microscopic creatures, and trying to figure out the patterns that they're doing, and they're like wedged in the ice as well, aren't they?
When they're in the sea ice, yes, but at the moment, the time we were there this season, it was in the water column. So we were sampling water. It's a very intricate process, but basically, we take water samples and we incubate them under various conditions, and we can measure these sulfur compounds. We can also find out who's there through molecular techniques and microscopy. So we can start to build a picture of what's there and how it's functioning now, and then start to understand how that process or function is going to change with various other condition changes.
So, yeah, this is one example, but just being down in Antarctica and seeing it with your own eyes, are you seeing or did you see how the landscape is being moulded and changed by changing climate conditions?
So we're seeing very clear effects of climate change in Antarctica. The West Antarctic in particular, and the West Antarctic Peninsula, is one of the fastest warming areas on the planet. So the average temperatures have increased substantially, and that of course leads to changes in the sea ice on that side. So we're getting changes in the formation of sea ice and its extent, but also its duration. And this has altered a lot of the biodiversity and biology over on the west side. So in the last 30 years or so, we're seeing species decline and also new species moving further south that were never previously found there before.
Like what species are moving there?
So in particular, penguins. So there used to be a large colony of, or colonies of Adélie penguins, and we're seeing that decline and other penguin species moving further south. So they were previously on the South Georgia Islands and now they're being found on the peninsula, but the fossil records show they've never been there before. So we are seeing very clear changes. On the east, it's a more complex story because we've had a lot of increase in sea ice extent in the last few decades and seemed a little bit counterintuitive given the idea of warming. But recent evidence has come to light that it's a result of changes in glacial melt. So with greater glacial melt from the continent, it's actually changing the physical chemical conditions in the ocean and changes the sea ice extent. So there's some really clear patterns emerging of climate effects down in Antarctica.
These changes happening in Antarctica, what sort of implication would they have for, I guess, just the rest of the planet?
The implications can be massive. The polar regions are essential for global temperature regulation and ocean circulation because we need the difference between warm and cold. We need the cold areas in order to drive circulation patterns in our atmosphere and oceans. They're incredibly productive areas. So the Southern Ocean is a very productive area for fisheries and biodiversity. And also these cold areas are CO2 sinks, so they're a major part of absorbing CO2 as well from our atmosphere and play a role in that cycle. So,
how exactly is a place like Antarctica taking in CO2?
It's the phytoplankton, that's exactly right, but also physical processes, because cold water just will absorb CO2. It has a higher affinity for CO2, so there's a physical reason, and you've also got a lot of wind and turbulence and circulation, but also the phytoplankton play a major role in that drawdown as well.
They are Antarctica's trees.
Absolutely.
I spoke to an artist called Todd McMillan who went down to Antarctica. He was with a convoy of people and there was a scientist who was on board when they were going down there. He said to me that he said to the scientist, look, I'm taking photos of the landscape here to show how it's changing and how things are looking dire. What's your opinion? Do you think that we're going to be able to switch this around? And then she said, there is no hope. Do you share that view?
I think a lot of us in climate research share that view simply because, although it sounds negative, rather than there's no hope, I think I would say we are going to see change. We're not able to stop what's currently happening. We haven't done anything to stop what's currently happening. You know, we're not actually making the changes required that we've known about for decades. So for me, rather than there's no hope, things are changing. We can't always predict how they're going to change. It's a lot of what we try to do. And the world will be a very different place. Hope, there should always be. But it's a matter of what's going to happen. But certainly for some species, it's going to be goodbye, and that's it.